Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. WNYC political director Andrea Bernstein and I are continuing our weekly podcast, Digesting Politics into the General Election Campaign. Digesting Politics is a web-only feature that you won't hear on the radio. Sign up for the Digesting Politics podcast for free at WNYC.org. Now, picture this. You study for over 4 years to get into your dream college. Your SATs are perfect. You even graduated in the top 1% of your class with honors, only to be rejected. That's what happened to 19-year-old John Lee. He was the unfortunate recipient of the thin envelope from Princeton University in 2006, and now he's suing. Lee claims that while he didn't get into his dream college, some of his fellow classmates did, classmates with lower test scores and lower grades, classmates who were of a different race than Lee, to boot. Now, the Department of Education is looking into Lee's claims that Princeton's admissions policy violated the student's civil rights and denied him admission because he was Asian American. For more now, we've got Jeff Yang. He's a columnist on Asian American issues for the San Francisco Chronicle. He's also the vice president of the group Icono Culture. And Jeff Yang, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian. Always great to be here.
So Lee thinks he was compared to other Asian American applicants to Princeton instead of being compared with the entire applicant pool. Do you know whether they do that kind of thing? And if so, is this the dark side of affirmative action?
Well, you know, there are a lot of issues that are wrapped up around this, of course. There have been sort of ongoing controversies around whether or not Asian Americans have somehow ended up being sort of the buffer zone, for instance, between white applicants and other applicants of color, African Americans and Latinos, in that there seems to be a sense in which as Asian American enrollment increases at selective colleges, the pool of African American acceptances and Latino acceptances goes down. But, you know, sort of the white admissions standard kind of stays fixed. So there is a question as to whether or not somehow Asian Americans aren't just competing only within their own pool, but to a certain extent in a zero-sum solution between themselves and other minorities.
And other minorities. So what does it say to you if the percentage of white students is staying fixed?
Well, it could be certainly a lot of different reasons. I think that, you know, certainly admissions officers are very clear on saying that they don't use race as a means of eliminating people's opportunity, that, you know, while diversity is a goal, they're not excluding people on the basis of race or admitting people solely on the basis of race. On the other hand, it's also clear that there are things beyond race that enter into the decision of acceptance. And one of these, for instance, is preferences based on alumni status or athletics and so forth. And it's a black box. It's kind of hard to say what are the ultimate decisions that are being made within that room. So
probably a lot of white parents have the perception that they're being outcompeted for the non-affirmative action slots, if you will, by Asian Americans who are coming in and percentage-wise anyway, just achieving at very high levels at a greater rate than whites are now.
Well, you know, when you bring parents into the issue, and this is fascinating. I mean, I myself am an Asian American son, Asian American parent, so I've sat between those two. My parents, in raising me, certainly felt compelled to optimize me towards certain kinds of standards. They had me practicing for SATs from fourth or fifth grade, you know, doing vocabulary and so forth. They sent me to preparatory post, you know, after school programs and the like. At the same time, you know, now that I have a son myself, I see that there's much more of a need to understand that there are different kinds of success and different kinds of success and different kinds of ways of achieving that success. So I don't feel as compelled to kind of put him through that gauntlet, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. So you think that's a discussion within the Chinese American community, other Asian American communities? right now?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, whether or not this notion that simply getting people to pursue test scores and grades, you know, maybe to the exclusion of other kinds of wholeness, is a concern within the community. And it's certainly something that's been raised by people who say that Asian Americans, you know, don't always meet the whole student standard that some colleges and other selective programs try to put out there. There are questions around that. I mean, it's controversial to say that Asian Americans fit some sort of stereotypical mold, but we have to put it out there. Asian American parents have a stereotype, and there's some truth to that.
My producer sent me this from the New York Times Metropolitan Diary today. It says, "Dear Diary, May is the time of year for music students at the Juilliard Pre-College Program to give their graduation recitals. These students are very talented, and ethnically diverse, and their proud parents provide post-recital snacks for family and friends. I'll never forget running into the man whom we saw at several recitals this spring. Our son gave his program, complimenting the students and diving into the food, including ours. When we met him again and he saw we recognized him, he smiled, threw up his hands, and said, 'I love coming to these recitals, seeing the energy and dedication of these students, but I'm getting so tired of sushi.'" So there you go. Now
it is funny. And, you know, there are running jokes around that as well, that, you know, within the Asian American community, you know, a well-rounded student is somebody who knows both piano and violin, for instance. So there's like there's a sense in which we are aware of some of these issues. And if it does turn out that the admission standards are more clearly delineated as not, you know, not really being, you know, focused on SATs in particular, for instance, then maybe that will start making a change in our community and you know, in a larger sense, around parents being so focused on there being a linear path, train this way, practice this way, and you will get what you want, your objective.
San Francisco Chronicle columnist Jeff Yang, my guest on WNYC, as we talk about the federal government investigation into Princeton University's admissions policy, whether they are rejecting Asian American applicants who score very, very high because they're being compared with other Asian American applicants. And we can take your reactions to this or your questions on the air at 646-778-3729, 646-778-3729. That's 646-778-3729, our temporary phone number. If it's easier to remember, it's 646-SPUD-RAY. And Steve in Newark, you're on WNYC. Hi, Steve.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
My statement is that my son just graduated from his school, and they fielded six students, for example, into Caltech in California, in Pasadena. And four white boys, one Asian-American girl, and one African-American girl. And the only one who got a full ride was the African-American girl because, you know, they're not stupid. They realize that. They were looking for this particular type of woman. You know.
Now you're talking about scholarships.
Right, but they all get accepted, but the only one who was given money even was because they were looking for that particular type of student in that, you know.
Well,
ethnicity.
Do you know her financial circumstances in order if you're going to make that claim?
Yeah, they're all pretty similar in the group and everything. They all come from working class families. And we went through that whole genre with, you know, that's another subject, tuition and scholarships, but, you know, it's not out there for the middle class.
Right. Well, one that we're actually going to tackle in the show in a separate segment coming up. But, Jeff, I mean, it really raises the whole question of what the goal of forming a freshman class should be. Should it be the most academically achieving based on some sort of objective set of criteria like GPA and SAT scores? Should there be – my understanding of what they actually have at many of the elite schools is they have a floor. And the floor is very high for a place like Princeton. But above that floor, they want to use some kind of judgment because it's not just a question of putting together all the people who had, you know, 1,600 on their SATs and 4.0 GPAs.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think that, you know, one of the things that that is talked about a lot is the fact that there really is a kind of a tension between this notion of the compelling interest of the larger body, whether that larger body is the university, the student body, or society at large, versus those of the individual. And when you're looking at it from this perspective, I mean, from, you know, especially using academic standards or even more abstract standards like the SATs as your floor, you got to wonder whether or not somebody, you know, who's in that 95th plus percentile is really going to be that different from people who, you know, that whole band, 95 to 99.999. So, you know, there's a sense in which it's not clear that it is unfair to give universities a little bit more flexibility in deciding within that band. Now, within that, you know, what's best for the student? Is it best to have everybody who has, you know, optimal academic history, or are there other compelling interest reasons to get diversity of different kinds in there? And I think very few people say that there isn't some kind of compelling interest in having diversity on campus.
Jennifer in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jennifer.
Hello, Brian. Thanks. I love your show.
Thanks.
I feel like, you know, this is it gets to many complex issues, but we have to remember Princeton is a private liberal arts college, and that it doesn't have any, as far as I understand, I don't think it has a responsibility to be democratic in this sense, that they should be able to choose qualities that they're looking for. That the whole basis of his lawsuit is that he's been discriminated against, and I don't really understand that, because it seems to me that they are allowed to choose. And I think Princeton needs to challenge itself and think whether they have some kind of an unconscious bias. But I don't think test scores and grades would necessarily dictate the qualities that they're looking for.
But how far down that road do you want to go in society? Do you want to say a landlord who owns a building runs a private institution, and if he wants a certain mix in his building, then he can deny certain people based on race, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, there are laws that say that he can't.
That he cannot.
That he cannot.
Right.
Right. I mean, I think that, but within, you know, without openly discriminating, if he chooses to accept an artist into his building over an investment banker because that's his bias, fine.
Jeff,
and I think private independent colleges should have the same thing. If they choose to pick people who don't have the best test scores, but who maybe have a more interesting background, mm-hmm. maybe more of an international, you know, whatever it is that they're looking for.
But if it's based on having too many Asians?
Oh, well, that's the question, and that's what Princeton has to figure out. But I don't think that the fact that he had perfect test scores and a perfect GPA in any way, you know, I just feel like there's an attitude of entitlement, like he should have gotten in, and that's what I'm objecting to.
And, you know, I think there's a good point there. I mean, to the extent that he hasn't been completely excluded from the system, he's going to Yale University. He's going to another college that has a parallel level of education and educational opportunity as Princeton. You know, and if you look outside of that sort of private system, say at the University of California system, for instance, where they very famously, of course, eliminated standards based on race, and now Asian Americans represent, you know, 37% of the UC college system. You know, so there are other alternatives. And I think that may well be something we have to take a look at. You know, to the extent that you can't have discrimination based on race, that's a legal standard we have to apply. As far as opportunity, on the other hand, you know, maybe there are other ways to address the needs of students that aren't limited to sort of closed boxes.
But you've also written in your San Francisco Chronicle column, haven't you? And Jennifer, thank you for your call, about the admission system at UC Berkeley that had, in your view, a similar discriminatory policy against Asian American students. So even at that 37%. So do you feel colleges reach a tipping point when students of a different race begin to outnumber whites on college campuses, and at that point the administration feels they have to act against them?
I think that you will never find an admissions officer or a college dean who will say that we act against any group. I mean, that's clearly where the line has to be drawn. I think that notion of compelling interest beyond the individual, you know, having diversity in the student body, is something they do bring up. And, you know, to that end, I think that very often when we look at these things, you see that there's almost a tension, a three-way tension between this notion of fairness, right, and redress, you know, sort of this larger historical concern we have of, you know, balancing society's injustices, and then, of course, merit and the needs of the individual. And that's where this thing becomes so controversial.
Here is a listener in Nassau County who would rather remain anonymous, which is fine. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I'm one of those parents who have a kid who just applied to college and didn't get into the Ivy. Because the reason is, And thinking back, being Chinese-American, I thought I should have pushed my kid more. I should have done what the Chinese do, because I realized my kid wasn't competing against other white kids. He was competing against Asian kids, which isn't fair, since I'm American, and so is my daughter. But because, you know, she has a Chinese last name, she ended up competing against other Chinese kids. This is, I seriously believe that.
I have to say that is certainly one of the really kind of toxic aspects to this whole dialogue, that people, whether it's clear or not, that there is some kind of internal in-community competition, there's that suspicion. There's always that lurking suspicion. And I think that there's a lot of ill will in the Asian American community around this.
Caller, do you think that your parents pushed you educationally more than you pushed your kid?
Actually, no. My parents never pushed me. But somehow I got into a pretty good college.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, a very good college. Well, and so when my kid's time, so when I grew up, I thought, you know, they should do it on their own merit. I shouldn't be, you know, pushing them to do something that they don't want to.
Thank you very much.
I never pushed them.
Thank you for your call. And Jeff, it sounds like you may be putting your kids inadvertently in a certain kind of admissions box, because you're rebelling on the one hand against admission policies that may have an overall minority quota and therefore be comparing Asian kids, you know, for the same slots to blacks and Latinos. But on the other hand, if Asian kids are expected to be the ones who don't need any kind of affirmative action and are expected to be the ones who are going to be the super highest achievers, and at the same time you're rebelling against this certain Chinese-American cultural pattern that you don't like of pushing the kids academically and thinking that that's all there is, then you may wind up with kids who don't have the perfect SAT scores in the 4.0 GPA, and they're going to be compared against all these other Chinese-American kids who are getting them.
Well, you know, that's a good point. On the other hand, I think that part of it is an understanding of whether or not, you know, college or, for that matter, kindergarten, right? You know, you just finished a really interesting segment on that, is the goal or the means to an end. And if the means to the end is, you know, you get into a good college, get into a good kindergarten, elementary school, whatever, on the path to having a good life, on the path to being a well-rounded and successful person, then maybe you don't have to go to an Ivy League. Maybe you don't have to go to a top, you know, kindergarten in order to achieve that goal. I guess that's part of what I'm thinking here. It's not that I don't have high expectations for my own sons, but rather that those expectations aren't focused exclusively on the same very narrow bandwidth concepts of success that my parents inculcated in me.
Lissa in Jersey City, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lissa.
Hi, Brian. My son goes to a public high school in Jersey City, and my daughter will attend next year. And it's you test to get in, similar to Bronx Science or Stuyvesant. But the criteria there is that they state very plainly it's 25% white, 25% African American, 25% Hispanic, and 25% other, which ends up being Asian. And I find that it's a great diverse mix, and it ends up being not only a diverse mix of obviously the ethnicities, but of the economics of the city as well. So I appreciate that the city is trying to find some way of getting access to really high-quality education to the kids who might otherwise be underserved.
Thank you for your call. And in this case, of course, we're talking about Princeton, not so much the city schools. Beforehand, we had the G&T question. Do you have a position on that one, by the way?
I think it's really interesting in that, you know, they're not even trying to achieve some sort of proportional distribution, right? But rather that they want actual balance, you know, across a rainbow spectrum. So, you know, they have certain goals they're trying to achieve, and, you know, they're goals that are best met by a certain kind of cultural interaction, I guess, where the students themselves are part of the education. I think there's an interesting thing there. I expect that there's probably still controversy among people who feel like they're, you know, deliberately in that case being set against people of their own ethnic background.
So we're just about out of time, but how do you think this Princeton case is going to wind up, and what do you think the real standard should be that it's decided on?
Well, I think that, you know, the reality is this is not going to be the case that ends this dialogue. I think that, you know, what's going to happen is they will do an investigation. They will find that the university most likely had both a compelling interest towards establishing diversity and did not, in fact, use racially exclusive standards to achieve it. On the other hand, the questions will still be out there. The controversies will still exist, and it will continue well into the time when my own sons get to college. As for what should happen, well, you know, I think that at the level of parents and students, we have to, I think, open our minds more broadly to the larger interests of kids as well. I mean, they are not well served by being told that the only way they can be successful is by, you know, getting into certain specific selective programs.
Jeff Yang, columnist on Asian American issues at the San Francisco Chronicle and vice president at the group Iconoculture. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer, WNYC. Up next, who owns Central Park? Stay tuned.